It is 2:06 on Monday afternoon. Time again for Political Rewind. Today we're going to talk a lot about state politics, but of course talk about what's going on with the Trump administration. Donald Trump and Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada, were scheduled to begin a news conference right at 2 o'clock. As things develop, as if the president makes news, we'll report it out to you. But of course, on All Things Considered at 4, they'll have complete reporting on that news conference. We'll bring you headlines as they develop. First of all, I should thank Bradley George for filling in for me on Friday. I appreciated his running a solid show, Jim Galloway.
We had fun.
Okay.
We did. And we'll have fun again today.
Jim Galloway, the political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, who you read on Thursdays and Sundays in the paper, and who oversees the Political Insider blog, where you now can also listen to the Political Rewind right after the show is off the air. You can hear it on our own website. You can subscribe to our podcast, but Political Insider actually posts it every time we're on the air. And we're going to read some comments from your readers at some point.
Oh, dear.
Boy. Boy.
I am infested with trolls. What can I say?
Heath Garrett is here for the first time. We're really glad you could join us. He's a Republican strategist. Among his clients, Johnny Isaacson. At one point, he worked with Sam Olens when he was running for attorney general. You deal, your firm handles gubernatorial and congressional races around the country as well, right, Heath?
That's right, Bill. It's a pleasure to be here with you and with Jim today.
Glad to have you. And Stacey Evans, Representative Stacey Evans, is here for the first time, too. She's a Democrat from up in Cobb County. Smyrna, part of Marietta, and you said the new home of the Atlanta Braves.
That's right, Bill. The new home of the Atlanta Braves and okay. Some old goodies, Dobbins Air Force Base and Lockheed Martin.
All right. And joining us from our Macon Bureau, we're glad to have Representative Alan Peake, who we're going to start the show. We're going to kick things off with you, Alan. And as we do, I want to point out you can tweet us at PoliticsGPB, PoliticsGPB. You know we like having you part of the conversation, so I hope you will join us. Representative Peake, are you with us down there?
I'm here. Glad to be with you and such a distinguished group today.
Yeah, it's a good group. Alan, I think your credentials are well known. You have taken on an effort to try to provide cannabis oil, medical marijuana, for the widest group of Georgians who are suffering from conditions that you and many medical professional scientists believe would benefit from cannabis oil. And your battle continues this year on two fronts, I think it's safe to say, right? You're trying first to expand the list of conditions again. Is that right?
That is correct, yes.
What does that mean?
Well, I mean, first we have to look at the law that's been in place for 2 years now. The sky has not fallen. It has worked. There are 1,300 people that are registered properly with the state to be able to access medical cannabis oil. There's still a huge flaw in our law, in that you still have to go somewhere else to get it.
And you have to break the law in order to do that.
And you have to break federal law to bring it back to Georgia, or have someone do that for you, or make it yourself. And those are the options that we've kind of forced our citizens to into at this point. But so far, in 2 years, there hadn't been a public safety issue. It's not a public health hazard. There haven't been DUIs from people high on medical cannabis oil driving the streets. And so I think it's a proper time to now let's look at maybe we should expand the existing law to allow more folks with debilitating health crises and conditions to be able to access, to be able to legally possess the medical cannabis oil. And then the second bill that we put forward was a constitutional amendment that would put it on the ballot in November of 2018 and let the citizens of this state decide if they want to allow the growing of marijuana, the cultivation of marijuana for medicinal purposes. And I think that's the proper next steps on this issue.
Well, of course, the second issue, which is allowing secure production, limited production here, is an issue the governor has stood firmly against throughout this process, right?
That is correct. And we knew that for the next 2 years while Governor Deal's still in office, that it was going to be difficult to pass a bill, a cultivation bill, that would allow growing, processing, and distributing medical cannabis in our state. while he was still in office. And so the thought was, okay, well, let's try and expand the conditions currently and then put on the ballot in November 2018, constitutional amendment, let the citizens decide. And if they decide in the affirmative, which I strongly believe they will, then we'll let the next governor deal with how to set it up and how to set up the regulatory structure to make it happen.
And what's the governor's attitude to that, to legislative action before he leaves office? I mean, has he given any indication of whether he would stand in the way of that?
Well, you have to ask him directly, Jim, and I wish you would, but he's given me very good sense that an expansion of the current law is something that he would be willing to sign into law. And so I feel confident if we put something on his desk that expands in a prudent way the current law to add more conditions, and we're looking at adding 6 conditions to the current law, that he'll sign it.
Well, and for anyone out there who's listening who has heartburn about expanding the categories of folks who can have access to the cannabis oil, I would really invite you to reach out to Representative Peek or to me or anyone else to listen to some of the testimony from the families who have come and are really begging for us to make them not lawbreakers. They are doing it, and they are seeing amazing results for their children and for their loved ones, and they're doing it out of love and desperation. They're not criminals, and we need to do what we can to make them not criminals.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of sympathy for the end user of the product, Alan. But let's talk about the constitutional amendment for a second, right? It would take a large majority of the House and the Senate, and then we've got to get it to the vote of the people. How do you feel about the prospects of a constitutional amendment getting on the ballot before we get to the politics of actually passing it?
I think it's going to be a tough sell at this point. It takes 2/3 of both the House and the Senate. It doesn't require the governor's signature, so we bypass right. him.
Mm-hmm.
But I still... It's going to be tough, and what's going to make this change is if there's enough public outcry from our constituents, from people calling us and calling my colleagues and saying, hey, we want this. Every poll that's out there shows about a 70 to 75% support of medical marijuana in our state, and so it's clear that the public desires this. Is there enough outcry to force us to action?
But to Heath's point, to get it out of the legislature, you're going to need a 2/3 majority. Stacey, are Democrats willing to help with that?
Step up.
Well, listen, I think Democrats want what most Georgians want on this, and that's access to healthcare options that are going to make us better. I think the devil's in the details on this. We want to make sure that it is going to be secure growth, and that it is going to be a fair marketplace for those who are coming in and trying to cultivate. But I think to the broader question, we have got to be really honest with ourselves, and I think Representative Peek could elaborate on this. The folks who seem to have an opposition to either expanding the list or cultivating marijuana growth in the state, those are folks that are staying pretty silent on the opiate crisis that we have in our state, which is very real. So people are very concerned about, if we go down this slippery slope with marijuana, everyone's going to get addicted to marijuana, and then we're going to have a bunch of drug addicts. Well, that's happening right now with opiates, and there has not been the move for some of these folks who are against the marijuana cultivation to speak out about what's happening and how our folks are getting addicted to opiates from legal prescriptions and then turning into drug abusers, and they are moving on to harder drugs. That is the gateway drug.
I want to back up just a step and understand something from a legal point of view. What is it in current Georgia, in the current Constitution, that requires an amendment to rectify, to allow for production in the state, Mr. Peek?
Well, the constitutional amendment is required.
Is it really a way of avoiding the governor having to veto? I mean, are you bypassing the governor by doing this and presumably trying to get 2/3 of the legislature to approve it?
Well, it's clear that we're not going to get the governor's signature on any cultivation bill in the next 2 years. So, yes. Am I bypassing the governor? Yes. And
okay.
Is it taking longer than I'd like it to? But yes, but I'm a realist at best that we're not going to get his signature on
the
cultivation
bill. And the other reality is in a Republican primary in 2018, you're also not likely to get an endorsement of it.
Oh, yeah. This is a briar patch that a lot of those candidates don't want to get into.
Well, that's an interesting point, because what this constitutional amendment would do, though, and the reason it may not get the majority of both chambers is because there are folks who will be running for governor in 2018 who will have the ability to block.
Jim Galloway, don't all of your polls in the last couple of years show that Georgians are much more, accepting of legalizing marijuana under limited circumstances than the politicians say?
I think medicinal marijuana in our statewide polls even shows Republicans, a majority of Republicans, in favor of this. And, of course, you know, it starts to decline rapidly once you go into recreational use, I think, among Republicans. I don't think so among Democrats. I think Democrats as a body are okay with recreational use.
That's right. And you also get the generational difference, right? As the population ages and the younger generation becomes voters, we're seeing a huge demographic shift there. And the younger voters are much more open to both medicinal and to recreational use. That's something the politics has got to pay attention to.
I'm sorry, Heath. I do want to read you a tweet from Ashley Stringer, who tweets it, "That GA hippie." She says she's a young mother here of a 9-year-old with autism. "I'm really hoping this bill passes." And Ross Hardy, who tweets at Georgia Wonk, says, "Psyched to hear Alan Peake on Politics GPB. He's fighting a good fight."
Oh, this man has quite a following, quite a fervent following.
I hear from all sides, I can assure you that. Let me hit one point that Representative Evans hit that is right on the money. We had a UGA professor, the chair of public policy, come and speak to our committee, who gave a research paper, peer review, that said there's a direct correlation in medical marijuana states with a decrease in opioid usage, cost, and deaths. And so, if folks really want to deal with this opioid epidemic in our state, there is clear data and clear statistics showing that medical cannabis provides.
This is a figure that the NFL is tossing around too.
Yeah, but wait a minute. Because haven't you just crossed a line in making that argument, Alan? It's one thing to talk about medical opiates. Are you saying that opiate use for medical conditions as opposed to opiate use for recreation? It seems to me, in a way, you've crossed a line here and suggested.
No, what I'm saying is that in states that have medical cannabis legislation and allow direct access to medical cannabis, there is a direct link to decrease in opioid use.
All right, thank you. I want to make sure I got that.
Fewer prescriptions for opiates.
Right. Fewer prescriptions. It'll save the state significant dollars.
Say that, Stacey. Yeah, I think that's important.
75% of the heroin overdoses in the state can be traced back to an opiate prescription or someone's someone's medicine cabinet where someone got access to a pill bottle.
That's a great clarification.
Here's the bottom line. We want to deal with the opioid epidemic in our state. We need to pass reasonable medical cannabis legislation.
Alan, if I could just interrupt. There's one fly in this, a huge fly in this ointment. Jeff Sessions, and to be fair, Jeff Sessions has only been attorney general for about a week yet. But have you gotten any signals from him at all on what his attitude is going to be toward enforcing the federal drug list, which says marijuana is a gateway drug and it's Schedule I?
Well, so far, for the last 8 years, the Justice Department basically is hands off of states that have medical cannabis legislation, as long as they didn't violate certain guidelines. Indications are, and I saw a quote from Jeff Sessions since he's been sworn in, said he does not see that position changing anytime soon.
Well, so he did say in his confirmation hearing that he could not rule out whether he might want to exercise federal control over state law on cannabis. Now, maybe he is changing his tune, as you say, Alan Heath.
That's right. No, I think Senator Sessions, if you look at his history in Alabama, he's going to have a personal tendency to want to go and prosecute those laws as they're currently written to the full force. However, he is part of the Trump administration now, and this is one of those areas where on social issues like this, the Trump administration isn't well-defined. They seem to be a little bit more open-minded, and I can also see them bifurcating this and saying, hey, we're not going to go after medical marijuana or cannabis,
but recreational,
we're going to go out there and punish these states who think they can just violate the federal law. So I think we could really see, like we do on a lot of these social issues under Trump world, this kind of bifurcated approach to it.
So Lisa Clark, our producer who's following the Trump news conference, says the news conference literally has just begun. They're making opening statements. So, again, we'll keep you on top of that. Let me throw out something that Lisa actually found today. She found it on Marijuana News. We are not going to ask Lisa why she's bookmarked that particular website. But the Associated Press moved a story that deals with a handful of congressmen who call themselves the Congressional Cannabis Caucus. They say they're going to introduce legislation to protect the cannabis industry, Dana Rohrabacher of California has introduced the Respect State Marijuana Laws Act of 2017. And they say this is common sense legislation. It's long overdue. It's time to end marijuana prohibition at the federal level and give states the authority to determine their own policies. So here's my real question for all of you. And start with you, Alan. In the long run, does something like this help your cause, or in fact, does it hurt the cause?
No, it absolutely helps it. I mean, and quite frankly, the solution is some action at the federal level. And the bill that's been introduced, I've seen it. It reschedules marijuana from a Schedule I drug to Schedule II or III, and it deschedules CBD, which would allow research on marijuana and allow free transport across state lines for CBD oil. And so, quite frankly, that is the solution. If Congress would act, we wouldn't be stuck with a hodgepodge of state laws like we have now.
Okay, makes sense. Makes sense.
Have you gotten any indication of a champion within the Georgia delegation?
I have sent a message to every single one of them over the weekend after this bill was introduced, and have heard back from a couple. But you know, for whatever reason, for the life of me, I can't understand it. My Republican colleagues just do not want to embrace this, even though it's so overwhelmingly supported by even 60 to 65% of Republican voters. And so, but I'm going to keep pushing them.
Well, and Alan and I have talked about this bill a lot. Alan is on the front edge of a global and macro trend in Republican politics, right? I don't like the word libertarian because it has a lot of other connotations to it, but there's a growing group of voters out there that are much more open to this, and I think the elected officials on the Republican side are having to start paying attention to it. I think it's going to be smart on the medical side. Recreational is probably a decade or two away, but you've got somewhere to go with this.
All right. Alan, we're going to continue the conversation. And what I want to do, Stacey, is because you brought up the issue of opioids and the epidemic, and I want to continue. We're going to have to take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about some of the approaches you think we need to be taking. I know it's an issue that matters a lot to you. So it is now 2:23 on Monday afternoon. You're listening to Political Rewind. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is David Green, host of Morning Edition. I'm here to talk with you about that poking feeling, the one that keeps reminding you to support public radio. You can support the programs you love by donating your used vehicle. That old car or truck could be worth hundreds of dollars to this station. All you have to do is call, and you might even receive a tax deduction.
Go to gpb.org/cars or call 877-GPB-1-CAR, and thanks.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nigut. We're joined by Jim Galloway. We're joined by Heath Garrett, a Republican strategist. His first appearance on the show. We're glad to have him here. And Stacey Evans, Democratic representative from Smyrna, Marietta. We're glad you're here. Alan Peake joins us from our studio in Macon. Jim Galloway, you have a little bit of breaking news from the Gold Dome.
Yeah, we hear that Governor Nathan Deal has signed the bed tax or the provider fee, the hospital provider fee. That kind of collects matching funds to draw down more Medicaid money for hospitals.
Well, that's been a controversial measure to some extent, and
it was radical and it was controversial maybe 4 or 5 years ago. I think we've gotten into the habit of acknowledging that it's necessary now.
Well, right, but. You know, so I'm going to put a gun to your head. You've got to do this is the point, I think. Yes, Heath?
Yeah, there's no question. These providers are in a situation where are you going to take a gun to your head or is somebody going to slit your throat? Because if you don't do the provider fee, then the entire financing of our health care system in the state of Georgia collapses underneath them as well. And so when we talk about health care, we know how complicated that is. But this is one piece that probably keeps everything stabilized for the next 18 to 24 months while Washington tries to delve into what are we going to do about Obamacare.
Stacey, let's continue with this conversation that you really led us into, which is we've got medical marijuana. You and Alan Peake saying that if we'd legalize it, we would in many ways cut back on the illegal use of opiates. This is clearly coming to the forefront as a major national issue. The Trump administration has said they're going to address it in as many ways as they can. Tell us about your approach.
Sure. Well, like most Georgians, I have a family member who suffered from opiate abuse. And I think if you walked into any room and asked people to raise their hand if they've got a personal connection to the problem, almost everyone's going to raise their hand. So I'm not unique in that regard. But then add to that being in hearings where the Georgia Bureau of Investigation comes in and says, we need more morgue space because we've got too many folks that are dying from drug overdoses. And when there's a drug overdose, you've got to do an autopsy, and they don't have any places to put the bodies anymore. Add on that a husband who went in for just a routine outpatient surgery procedure and came out with a 30-day prescription for opiates. And I kind of got to the point where I had had enough. And so I've got a bill that will hopefully be dropped later this week or the following week that will just try to clamp down a little bit on these prescriptions. Part of it follows a little bit what Senator Unterman's trying to do in the Senate to limit the amount of the first prescription that you get. I actually would like to go a little bit further and say you've got to try something else before you go to an opiate, because that's the problem. It's that first prescription of an opiate right after a surgery where perhaps an ibuprofen or another painkiller might have been sufficient. Also, something in place that has doctors reporting on the effects of their prescriptions every year. We make providers who prescribe opiate oil do the same thing. And I think that we're at a point with opiates where we need to see what are the results of all these prescriptions. And then a simple pill take back policy. If you have extra pills right now, there's really nowhere you can take them back. And I think that providers who prescribe them need to take them back. And I think that everybody needs to be given very clear instructions on how you can safely dispose of them in your home.
That's actually a very good idea. I had a major surgery back in September. And I've got a huge container of opioids just kind of sitting in my house. And you're right. I don't know what to do with them. I only took them maybe for 2 days because they keep me awake. They don't put me to sleep. They keep me awake. So it wasn't any good.
And I think a lot of folks are in that boat. And that's why that stat that I had heard about a year ago at a chamber event where someone said 75% of heroin overdoses start in a medicine cabinet from a legal prescription either to them or someone else. And Christmas and Thanksgiving are big times for overdoses because folks are visiting perhaps older relatives who have a lot of prescriptions in the medicine cabinet that they didn't clean out. For example, yours, Jim, that you're talking about sitting around, got to watch who comes in your house because you never know who might be searching for pills.
Well, so, I saw a recent study where teenagers now, you talk about gateway, right? The gateway is through their parents' medicine cabinets. It's no longer through the friend or the pusher at school or down the street, right? It's now the number one way for teenagers to get introduced to it. So, and we got all 159 counties in the state of Georgia are affected by this. We have small rural counties where there are upwards of 1 million prescriptions a year, right? We know there's a problem. The data shows us where we can go at it. So not only do we have to have the bills like what Stacy was talking about, but we also got to have the prosecutorial ability to go after the people who are abusing their prescription abilities.
All right, so I want to go back to the first part of your proposal, which is legislating how large a prescription a doctor can give on the first time around. Alan Peake, you've worked with a lot of doctors as you've dealt with your medical marijuana legislation over the past few years. I can't imagine that doctors would push back pretty hard on being told by politicians how they should prescribe a drug.
Well, they will. They will push back. I tell you, Representative Evans is on to something, and I think there's some real merit in her legislation. The interesting thing is, if you stand back and look, though, all these bills, all this legislation that's coming to deal with the opioid epidemic, and a lot of it is because people who have pain, intractable pain or chronic pain, and they're driven to these oxycodone, hydrocodone for pain. When we could simply add intractable pain into the medical cannabis legislation, and it would potentially provide an option for folks rather than getting hooked on addictive opioids. But yeah, I would imagine that the Medical Association of Georgia may want to be weighing in on Representative Evans' bill here soon.
Yeah, I'm sure they're not going to love it, but we are left with the consequences of all of these prescriptions that are, you know, quite frankly, being given out like candy. And I've come to start calling expansion of opiate oil the gatekeeper drug. Representative Peake, I think you would like that.
Yeah, that is good.
Tell us about kind of support you're seeing around you for your measure.
Well,
in the House.
Sure, and I've just started talking about it, and folks are very interested. I mean, we want to do this right. But there's a real problem, and everybody sees it. It's costing us lives. I mean, it's sobering when somebody comes and says, we need more morgue space because people are dying so much from these opiates. So I'm sorry that the doctors are going to be mad, but we've got a duty to Georgians to do something about this crisis.
You know, go ahead, Alan.
Yeah, I was going to say, we cannot bury our heads in the sand on this issue. This is something we have got to address in some form or fashion, so I applaud my colleague for getting on it.
Heath Carey, what do you think Tom Price might say as our new HHS secretary about this issue? If he's addressed this in any way in confirmation hearings, I missed that.
No, he has opposed medicinal marijuana.
No, I'm talking now about the opioid crisis, The Trump administration says it's going to tackle head on.
I'd imagine Tom Price is going to have a big involvement in this issue. I think he views this as the number one growing, kind of drug-related issue in the country. I think there's the question of how are you going to do it. Obviously, as a former physician, he's going to have the natural reaction to not wanting any kind of state or federal interference with that doctor-patient relationship. But you know what happens, right? Even as Republicans, when the entity that should be self-regulating themselves are not doing a great job about it, then even Republican voters are going to pay attention and at some point in time say, okay, we've got to do something about this. And we, even though we've had some legislation, we still have a lot of pill mills here in the state of Georgia, and it's tied to a lot of other organized crime too. So I can see the federal government and the Trump administration wanting to get involved in this.
You know, it's interesting, Jim. You talked about the surgery that you had and the prescriptions you got. The reason I was gone Friday is I had oral surgery. Stacy, I did get a prescription for oxycodone, I guess. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I don't know the difference between that and OxyContin. I don't know if it's anywhere near as troublesome. But I got that, and I got a prescription from the same surgeon for Tylenol in a high dosage. Now, I'm going to take the Tylenol because I don't want to go anywhere near a drug that could give me an addiction. So here's the question. To some extent, beyond legislation, is there a campaign for patient awareness that can have any effect at all in the beginnings of people's addictions?
I think it could, but I think the doctors are the gatekeepers there. And so I think if they're going to prescribe, like they did to you and like they did to my husband, both an ibuprofen and oxycodone at the same time, maybe instruct you, why don't you try the ibuprofen first, see if that works for you. If you are just debilitated and you can't move, then you move on to this. Or better yet, for my legislation, call me if this ibuprofen isn't working and we'll get you something stronger. But starting out with the strongest option is just not smart. So a PR campaign could be good, but I think that PR campaign has got to go through the doctors in some way.
But I like the disposal idea of creating a method of disposal. And surely doctors wouldn't be opposed to that.
I would hope not. It would be a simple keeping a bin around. They dispose of a lot of medical waste, and I'm sure they have procedures in place, and this could be just something that could be added to it.
And that's how you do the PR campaign, right? You use that as the kind of the hook to get into the community and talk about cleaning out your current medicine cabinet, and then you do have to educate folks. I do think this is one of those PR campaigns, and it's part of the problem with medical marijuana, right? You've got a brand problem when people are confusing opioid addiction from prescription drugs with off-the-street heroin, right? And, what's a gateway and what's not? And recreational marijuana is different from medical marijuana. So I do think there's an evolving political campaigns around each one of these issues that you're going to see, and they're going to play out in these primaries in 2018, not just in Georgia, but all over the country. And then we're going to have general referendum, around them.
Before we leave the state legislation, I want to tie up a couple loose ends. Alan P., could you just, for our listeners' benefit, what are the conditions you want to add to for cannabis oil?
Well, there are six conditions we want to add to the eight existing conditions,
right.
and they are autism, Tourette's syndrome, PTSD, Alzheimer's, AIDS, and intractable pain. And all these are consistent with what's been done in other states. Autism is fairly new to the scene, but again, like Stacy said, we have seen some amazing testimonials from families who are basically violating current law by providing it to their children now, and seeing incredible results for those who have severe autism.
And Stacy, in terms of your proposal to limit the amount of a prescription that a doctor can write, where does that is that now a bill that you have or are about to drop, or are you still thinking about how you're going to frame that?
It's being drafted, and I would hope to be able to drop it later this week, hopefully.
Okay. You can tweet us at PoliticsGPB, and I tell you that now because we've gotten some tweets on this. Sports Slurry says, you can take medications to most Walgreens for disposal. They have secure bins located in the pharmacy. I did not know that, but it seems to me you better have a more focused education campaigns around opiates, I would think, to do that very thing, right?
Right,
Stacey?
Information is key, and that will be part of my bill, that if a doctor's going to make this prescription, he's also got to provide information about how you can dispose of it. So it could be letting you know about the CVS policy, but also providing something in the doctor's office.
Ted Barfield, who just loves to tweet and poke at us, doesn't he, Galloway?
Oh, he does.
He says, like most Georgians, what? I don't think opiate abuse is quite that common. I think he's suggesting what I'm hearing him saying, you did not say this, Stacy, is that somehow most Georgians are aware of what a problem this is. I don't think that's, or certainly most Georgians aren't dealing with this problem, put it that way.
No, I'm not saying most Georgians have an opiate problem. I'm saying most people know someone who does.
Okay. Apparently Ted Barfield doesn't, and he wants to make sure you know that.
I can introduce him.
Tell you what we're going to do. Let's get our second break out of the way right now, because we have an awful lot to talk about in terms of things happening in Washington, some of which really affect Georgians very specifically. We're here with Stacey Evans, Representative Stacey Evans, Heath Garrett, Jim Galloway, and in our Macon Bureau, Alan Peake. It's 2:37. We'll be right back.
Advertisers and marketers already track our shopping behavior online, but businesses are now tracking our behavior elsewhere through apps on our phones.
They track how you're walking through the store, where you are, and can even change the price on goods.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Joseph Turo about his new book, The Aisles Have Eyes. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 on GPB.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. Representative Alan Peake from Macon joins us from the Macon Bureau. Jim Galloway of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution is with me, as he is on Mondays and Fridays. Republican Heath Garrett and Democrat Stacey Evans. Jim, we were kind of kidding in the studio before the show went on the air about the appearances on all of the Sunday shows of Stephen Miller.
Right.
Senior aide to President Trump.
At 31 years old.
31 years old. And the reason he's even more relevant to us here, Heath Garrett, is that this is a kid who, I mean, I say kid because he's young. I'm not showing any disrespect. he came up with Jeff Sessions in Alabama and was deeply involved with Sessions in some of the campaign Sessions worked on in Alabama.
No, that's right. And, you know, you're being thrown into the firestorm, right? To be that young, to be, you know, into Washington, D.C., and then to be thrown out on the Sunday shows, that's a tough task for even the best professional.
Well, it didn't seem like it was a tough task for Miller. I'm going to give credit to MSNBC because they helped us. They put this montage together and made it easier for us. This is Stephen Miller as he made the rounds of Face the Nation, Meet the Press, Fox News with Chris Wallace. And you're going to hear him respond to a variety of different issues. I think you'll understand in each case what he's responding to, but I think just the tone of what he had to say is worth listening to. Here's Stephen Miller.
This is an ideological disagreement between those who believe we should have borders and should have controls, and those who believe there should be no borders and no controls. This is a judicial usurpation of power. The end result of this, though, is that our opponents, the media, and the whole world will soon see, as we begin to take further actions, that the powers of the president to protect our country are very substantial and will not be questioned. And the bottom line is, the president's powers in this area represent the apex of executive authority. We will have
unquestioned military strength beyond anything anybody can imagine.
We have a president who has done more in 3 weeks than most presidents have done in an entire administration.
Saying that we stand with our ally, having the two men appear on camera worldwide to all of planet Earth, was a statement that will be understood very well by North Korea.
I'm not going to make a comment on that. I don't have any information on it. I do want to say that Sean Spicer, as always, is 100% correct, and that what he said is true and important, and I agree with it.
So then you are making a comment on it.
I'm not going to make any new comment. It is a fact, and you will not deny it, that there are massive numbers of non-citizens in this country who are registered to vote. That is a scandal. We should stop the presses. That's the story we should be talking about. And I'm prepared to go on any show, anywhere, anytime, and repeat it and say the president of the United States is correct 100%.
This guy's a holy...
That's the question that I think you should ask the president, the question you should ask Reince, the chief of staff. I'm here today as a policy advisor, mm-hmm. and my focus is on answering the policy questions that you have. General Flynn has served his country admirably. He is a three-star general. He's head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, and I look forward to having more discussions about this in the future.
So the White House...
All right. The one thing you may not, he was in talking about, you better ask the president about it. He's talking about whether Michael Kelly, the national... Michael Flynn is in trouble because of, and we'll talk about it, his possible communications with the U.S. ambassador, the Russian ambassador of the United States. We'll talk about that in a minute. Okay, Heath Garrett, you are a political consultant par excellence. You have elected a lot of Republicans.
Sounds like you're getting buttered up for something.
Tell me how you would sit down with Stephen Miller after his appearance on all these shows yesterday. What might you counsel him about future appearances?
Well, I do think we have to remember that a person in Stephen Miller's position, right, is kind of handcuffed by the person that he's representing. And so you cannot advise Donald Trump and or anybody in Donald Trump's world like you would advise the rest of the elected Democrats and Republicans around the country. I mean, he is such a unique personality, individual, social media phenomenon, whatever it is. And so I think that's the interesting part. How much of this is Stephen Miller being the policy advisor, and how much is this him representing his principal, right, Donald Trump, who loves drama, who loves exaggeration, who loves big, flowing, creative, artistic defenses of whatever his position is.
But I will tell you, there was a stridency in those interviews that you just don't see on quiet Sunday mornings, and I would venture to guess that there were millions of Americans left slack-jawed by that.
Yeah,
a president's authority will not be questioned.
Yeah, aside from the questions about whether he's got the Constitution right on the court's ability to, in fact, rule on a president's actions on immigration, the tone, Alan Peake, I'm going to put you just a little on the spot here. You have flirted off and on. You've tried to figure out over the last year or so just where you are when it comes to Donald Trump, first as a candidate, but now, of course, as president of the United States. When you heard this compilation or maybe saw some of it yesterday, what does that do to your thinking about the administration right now?
Well, I'm not sure you want to get into my head on the thinking of this administration. Trump won fair and square. He's a president. I was not supportive of him. I did not vote for him. And so I did not vote for Clinton either. But he's brought in good people, which has been a good thing. And so I've admired that. On the particular issue of the young man getting on there and having to defend him, I think Jim's right, or Heath said it, I guess. You're having to defend your boss. And Heath knows – Heath's a young guy who's had experience in a lot of situations like that, so his advice is probably pretty sound. I'm not sure I'm answering your question because I'm not sure I can. But
you're doing fine. Stacey, the president, tweeted yesterday he thought Stephen Miller did a great job.
Of course he did. Of course he did. But I think what...
Well, he doesn't think Sean Spicer's been doing a great job, so he doesn't always say that about his people.
Well, the tone and the definitiveness of everything he said, whether it was true or not, was very Trump-style, as Heath pointed out. And I think while Trump is very unique, the position of president is not. And I mean, in the sense that everyone who has that role, they have to understand that they are checked, that they are balanced. And I don't care how authoritative Donald Trump thinks he is or should be, that's not how it is. Our founders were very smart. They put in checks and balances. All the branches have equal say on this. And so they may want to be unquestioned, but they're not. I don't care how much they wish it to be true. And perhaps Mr. Miller and Mr. Trump, Mr. President, both need to be counseled
on that. And Bill, I think we have to remember that Miller wasn't just carrying Trump's water. He is one of the big policy creators.
Absolutely.
He allegedly helped draft executive order on immigration restrictions.
Yeah. So this
is a good example, right? The new administration, you know, felt like the world was against them. And they are going to come in and push as far and as hard as they can. And
as fast as they can.
Now, you know, it's hard to look back only 8 years ago. But the difference is that President Obama had a supermajority, right, in the Congress. And so there really were no checks and balances on him. So he pushed and did some tremendously difficult things in a relatively short period of time. You just didn't have as much friction because he had a supermajority in both places. And, you know, in all honesty, the media wasn't very tough on him in his first administration, particularly in the first 150 days. So we have two completely different personalities. Clinton's administration, the first 100 days, had some pretty strident people or incompetent people, you know, out and around him, almost to the point of a constitutional crisis. We use those terms in 1993 around President Clinton's first 100 days. So I think that they're going to figure some of this out. But what I would say to Stephen Miller is, hey, look, you can make your same policy arguments, but you can make them slightly more intelligent and principled way that doesn't electrify but still provides the drama, right? We know this president likes drama. We know that their mentality, their political strategies, to thrive on that drama. But he does have to be careful about the language because we do have checks and balances. The Congress is going to have a lot. The Republican Congress is going to have a lot to say about these things.
Yeah, I'd really love to hear from our Republican and Democratic state representatives on one aspect of this. And Stacey, I'll start with you. There are many, you know, we're now, there's a feeling that we have a certain amount of chaos in the West Wing right now. Certainly that's what the media is reporting, the national news organizations. People were very hard on Stephen Miller in the media over this. They're hard on Sean Spicer. I just kidded about him a minute ago. There does seem to be, to me, who's been a journalist for almost 40 years, a certain amount of hyperventilation going on in the way the Trump administration is being covered. They are brand new. Heath Garrett says they moved too fast, probably. They wanted to show they were doing a lot. They probably did move too fast. But does every administration deserve a chance to calibrate and recalibrate? Maybe Trump does have to get rid of some of the people he brought in initially because they're not up to the job he wants them to. Are we being, in fact, a little bit overly dramatic about the Trump administration right now, or do they deserve everything they're getting?
Well, I think every administration deserves a chance. Even President Trump deserves a chance, but they don't deserve a chance to drive us into a ditch. And when we see that happening, we have to say something. When we see our basic fundamental principles being challenged and the Constitution being violated, we have to say something. But I will agree with you. There were some hyperventilation to things before this executive order that perhaps were a little over the top. And so it just seems like there's nothing that this man can do that people won't jump on. And I think you should save your outrage for when it's deserved. Now, I think right now it is deserved.
Yeah.
But I agree with you.
Yeah.
There was a little bit of outrage before that probably could have been tempered down.
Yeah, you know, Alan, Democrat, right. Maxine Waters and other Democrats are already talking about impeachment. This guy's been in office 3 weeks.
Well, listen, I've been a CEO of a large company. I know what it's like when you want to come in and start making changes. And to his credit, Donald Trump is doing that. He campaigned on that, on being able to make changes, whether it be immigration policy or other policies. And so I don't blame him, and I think he's doing what he told the American people he was going to do. And one of the reasons he got elected was that he would come in and take action. And so for them to be critical of every single action that changes the course and direction of our government, I think is a hollow fight. I mean, There are certain issues, yes, that maybe deserve some criticism. But, boy, you have to give him credit for saying, hey, I'm going to come in and do what I campaigned
well,
on.
Well, if he's really done any of this stuff, the executive orders are largely hollow, Jim.
But I think tone matters a great deal here. Look, last week we were talking about Donald's tweet about a so-called judge. And you know, it may have helped Neil Gorsuch. And his nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Because he spoke out.
Because he spoke, he said, that made me very uncomfortable. It was disheartening. It was demoralizing. But then you get Steve Miller here to talk about the supremacy of the executive branch over the judicial branch.
Yeah.
And you've wasted all of that goodwill now. And now you're going to have Democrats bearing down on this nomination again.
Thank you. Because I don't want to go too far with what I said. You're right. There are certain lines here. When an executive asserts that the judiciary does not have any ability to counter his or her decision-making, then the media better jump in quickly. Jim Galloway, what do you think the chances are that Heath Garrett, who's been very close to Johnny Isaacson professionally for many years,
joins the White House staff? Yeah, I think
would talk to us candidly about how uncomfortable it must be for his client, Johnny Isaacson, in terms of dealing with the Trump White House right now.
I think he's probably going to try to talk about that as little as possible, which would kind of reflect what Isaacson's strategy was last year during his reelection campaign. Yeah.
All right, Heath.
Well, now, wait a second here. We got to talk about that. The thing to do with, I mean, Donald Trump is a genius in many ways. And so we talk about the hyperventilation of the media. He's absolutely using that to his advantage. The media is talking about Nordstrom, and they're talking about Stephen Miller's performance, and they're talking about, you know, whether or not it's the appropriate checks and balances. And all the while, he's over here doing substantive things, you know, with the administration. He's starting to, you know, lay the groundwork for legislation that'll come out of the Congress and these other kind of things. Now, whether we like that or not as a style, and it's definitely not Johnny Isaacson's style, and by the way, it wouldn't work for most other elected Republicans or Democrats. You have a billionaire who was a number one rated television host who loves being the center of all attention and believes there's no such thing as bad press. We've never seen that before at this level of government, but he is using that as a part of his strategy in the Stephen Millers of the world. But that doesn't mean that the Johnny Isaacsons of the world, they're just trying to focus on what's actually being done, not what's being said about it.
All right, Heath, you may have to face what the angry crowds.
Right.
That we, Jim Galloway, saw show up last weekend with low-level congressional.
Okay. Not me. That was Bluestein.
I know that, but I don't mean you saw it personally. I mean we all are aware of it because Bluestein reported on it. Thank you. There is something happening here. And I assume that Johnny Isaacson is going to be confronted with people with signs, save my health care. Stop trying to deport everybody. I mean, you're likely to be faced with this. Do you believe this is a genuine movement?
No question about it. In politics, on either side, right, you have to have a common enemy. And at the end of the day, what Donald Trump has become over the last 6 months, last 6 weeks, last 6 days, is the Democrats' best hope of having a common enemy and is driving all the constituencies of the Democratic Party together. I use this example. The Democratic caucus had a meeting about a month ago. They used to get 25 or 50 people. They had 500 people.
You know, over 500.
Yeah, you have the staff of the senator and a couple of congressmen talking about constituent services. This is boring things, and you have a couple hundred people show up to protest. So this is organized. This is an intelligent opposition, and it's coming.
So what's your advice to Republican members of Congress, either Perdue and Isaacson or any of the House members? Do you cut back on town hall meetings? Do you have private meetings with constituents instead?
I think it's a little. Our advice is you do a couple of different things. One is you don't cower from the public, right? You can never do that as an elected official. That's always the thing. But you also don't become captured by the groups who are. If you obviously don't get invited to a protest, you don't just show up for the sake of being the punching bag. So if you can create a civil way to continue to have these town halls and these open meetings, you absolutely do that. But more importantly, we believe in what we call the Coke and the Peanuts diplomacy. When you have somebody who is so opposed to you, you have to invite them in and let them have a voice and sit down and listen to them. So to all my Republican clients and friends, that's exactly how you got to handle this. It's very similar to the organization of the Tea Party. And so Republicans actually have a little bit of practice at it. It's just a different philosophy coming at them this time.
All right. I'm going to call a halt to our conversation with that, because I think there's some tweets that we got that are really worth reading. Chris Carpenter, who tweets at Chris Carpenter, too, says, I can tell you moving to Colorado just a month ago was one of the best things I've done in my life, not to mention the help medical marijuana can give to opioid addicts patients. It has helped me kick a 4-year doctor-prescribed addiction. Truly wish the South had this option. We got a tweet from Catherine Kina, who says that in Savannah, you can drop off your unused prescriptions at the police station, among other places. Edward Funtz says, don't know why GPB went to so much talk when they already got the gold standard political rewind, miss my music. Well, that's a mixed kind of comment about GPB right now. But thank you for listening to us, Edward. We appreciate that. Jim Galloway, it looks like this week we're going to see the possibility that the Trump White House could make some staff changes. We do think that his national security advisor is in significant trouble. Do you think by Wednesday, when your colleague Greg Bluestein is here, we might have a story to talk about?
You know, I don't think so. I think Trump is going to hang on to Mike Flynn just long enough to thwart our expectations. And then he'll be eased out the door slowly. I mean, if I were going to be advising him, that's what I would do. And look, you're dealing with a president who more so than most presidents thrives on loyalty. He does not turn in his people.
Best thing Donald Trump could do is hire Heath Garrett as his advisor.
There you go. All right. Alan Peake, you get the last word on today's show. And again, I want to thank you for joining us. From our Macon Bureau, we're going to watch as you continue your push to expand the access to medical marijuana for people in this state who many feel really deserve it and need it. Stacey Evans, thank you so much for being here today. We enjoyed having you. Heath Garrett, you as well. Jim Galloway, as always, you know how much I like having you sitting right next to me there. Lisa Clark says that the news conference that Trump just had with the Canadian Prime Minister, he said we will deal with North Korea very strongly. In regard to immigration, he said we want a big, beautiful, open door, but we can't let the wrong people in. On All Things Considered at 4 o'clock, you'll hear some of what President Trump had to say from his own mouth, and there will be analysis of it as well. So we hope you join us for that. Remember, if you cannot be near a radio when we're on the air, you can listen to us all sorts of ways. You can subscribe to our podcast by downloading it from iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can go to our website, go to gpbnews.org, and you can listen to our shows there. They're all archived right there. And you can go to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution's Political Insider blog, where the show is posted. Jim, I said I'd read a couple of remarks from Friday's show. Dog Fan says, what exactly are you doing by trying to portray all Trump critics as rioters and hooligans? You Trumpers try to marginalize everyone who doesn't worship him like you do. That was the Democratic side of it. You've got a lot of Republicans on there who don't like much of anything that we talk about.
Hard to please them. Hard to please them.
All right. Thank you all for joining us. That's it for us for today. We'll be back Wednesday at 2:00.